Fred Film Radio from the 76th Venice International Film Festival, Italy.
Hello, everyone. We are Fred Film Radio from the Venice Festival for our live show in English.
Welcome.
A weird couple.
Welcome to the Fred experience, to the Fred Venice experience.
I think you've seen too many VR things.
No, I've never seen... Trivia about me, I've never seen a single VR thing in my life.
You know, you should, actually.
I should.
You should, because it's like a... It's a nice trip to do.
Right. Now, what does VR stand for?
Virtual reality.
Oh, okay. That makes sense.
Well, it makes a big sense, yeah, actually. Well, so I'm Angelo Cerbi.
I'm Matt Micucci, and by day.
By day, and, well, we don't see by night.
We better not
and
say that.
Not say that. And
my
we
job.
Are at our, like, one, two, three, four, fifth day of the, I think.
I don't know.
Me neither.
Well, let me see. It's the fourth daily.
The fourth daily.
Daily,
so
but...
Day. It's the fifth day, whatever.
Somewhere around there.
At the Venice Festival, today was the day of The Laundromat by Steven Soderbergh and The New Pope by Paolo Sorrentino. We had the pre-screening this morning, official screening tonight, so we cannot say anything until tomorrow. We can just say that Lady Meryl Streep was here in our studio earlier, and Paolo Sorrentino as well, so if you want to know more about it, you can log in on our Facebook page and see the live shows from here. And but we can talk, because the embargo is over, about two movies that were shown yesterday that we both enjoyed. And that, we both saw, which are Emma by Pablo Larraín and Joker by Todd Phillips. Which one do you want to start with?
Well, you know, I actually can't talk in detail about any of these films because I'm self-embargoed in the sense that I haven't seen either of them. But I can tell you that if I was to pick one film that I could watch if it wasn't for my very busy schedule, it would be Joker by Todd Phillips. And in fact, all it took was one film still that I saw probably weeks ago, where I saw Joaquin Phoenix. Some people say Joaquin, but to me he's Joaquin Phoenix dressed as the character, and I was like, this is very interesting. And I keep getting more curious because it's probably one of the most present posters around the festival area.
Absolutely. And well, the film is mixed feelings, mostly good ones. The film has been liked by mostly everybody. I had a couple of doubts about it. Of course, Joaquin Phoenix is massive, is enormous, gigantic. Probably a little bit too much. It was overdoing sometimes, but we love his overdoings. We're not complaining. The only thing is that it's a really dark, insightful, and more intellectual film than what everybody can expect about that specific character. You know, the Joker is like an evil guy, and we just enjoy his evilness, and that's it. But here it goes much, much deeper. And he's amazing when he turns, when he starts being evil. It's really fantastic. For me, too bad that this happens too much inside of the film, after like more than 1 hour or so. Right. The preparation of this burst is a little bit too long for me. But I'm one of the few saying that, so I'm not complaining. But the film is, it would be a blast. He would be completely, for sure, winning of the Oscar, if not getting very close to it.
Right.
Because his performance is, like, outstanding.
There you go. Let's start a bet. If he wins an Oscar, you know, you win something. You win a prize.
The film will, I'm pretty sure that it will gather tons of nominations.
Yeah.
Tons. Also a lot of technical ones, because you know the DOP is amazing, the art direction is fantastic. All the also the cinematography is pretty good, because all this, the last part of the film when the actual revolution inside of Gotham City happens after Joker did what he did, that I'm not spoiling, is really a feast for the eyes.
Right.
But it's too short for me. That part should have been much longer to be more enjoyable. But anyway.
There you go. Well, I think that it's time to move on now. I wanted to mention this. We're going to be talking about Emma.
We are.
By Pablo Larraín, former Fred Award winning director, which is
still very happy about it. He told us in the interview that he has his award on his desk at home.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So does he?
Yeah.
Maybe he records his notes with it, you know, his genius notes about future projects. I can just imagine him doing that, you know.
And then another weird thing that he told us in the interview that he finished shooting Emma like the week before, close to the week before coming here to present Roma.
Wow.
So, and you cannot imagine two films more different than this.
Yeah, but they almost rhyme. Emma, Roma. There's a musical.
You're a poet.
Right, I'm a poet.
You're a real poet.
I know.
No, but I mean, actually, the two films are like miles away from, I mean, one from the other. So coming from the same mind, the same director is pretty weird.
He's a very versatile director,
absolutely.
In the tradition of so many
greats. And I think
greats.
That this is why people that didn't like Emma, they were expecting something closer to what he did for the last film, why he wanted to cut a lot. And, well, Emma is the story of this woman, young woman called Emma, of course.
Right.
That has creates like a huge, complicated life for herself and for the people around her in order to get back her son. And, but this is not even half of what happens in the film.
Right.
Because, you know, the strength of the film is the visual and the editing, because the editing is really, really demanding for the audience. You don't get a single thing for like 40 minutes. You're just like, you know, you're overwhelmed by images that are very beautiful, but you really don't get exactly what's happening. Mm. And it gets slightly clearer going on, and it gets very clear at the very end. So at the very end, you reevaluate all you saw.
Right.
Because now it has makes sense. Like before, it doesn't. So it's exactly, besides the aesthetics, compared to Roma, is also completely different in terms of narrative, because Roma was very linear, you know, as narrative. This one is completely cut and pasted in a weird way.
Sounds fascinating.
Yeah.
Definitely one of the top movies that people have been trying to catch here in the
league. Yeah, I think so.
They're actually, I think these past few days, I think today and yesterday were extremely busy, particularly busy. There was a lot of people around.
Yeah.
You know, but tonight, or maybe in the next, or maybe from tomorrow, bad weather is promised here. So we'll see.
So we can have like a break from this like very Vietnamese weather, if we can say that, very humid and very hot. But and also, yeah, a lot of people will leave, because a lot of tourists will leave. And but yesterday there were people sleeping in sleeping bag outside of the Palazzo Cinema yesterday night.
I remember the days when I used to do that. No, that was
when you
fun.
Were young.
When I, what do you mean?
Younger.
Young
sorry.
Anymore.
Younger.
I know. I'm totally. I'm getting. Yeah. I feel very old at this festival.
Well, just tell us something about the movies you saw.
Well, can I tell you? I was gonna bring up a film that I saw in the section that I've actually been very prominent in watching movies in, and it's the Orizzonti section. So this film was an interesting one. It's called Giants Being Lonely. Giants Being Lonely, and it's an interesting title, because Giants usually is a name for like so many sports films in the United States. By the way, if you hear a lot of noise coming from anywhere, it's because this is a crazy busy place that we're at, so a lot of people are doing stuff. Giants Being Lonely is also interesting for you cinephiles out there or art lovers, because, well, it's directed by Greer Patterson, but it's also produced by Olmo Schnabel, who is the son of Julian Schnabel. I didn't know. I found out this morning. That's very interesting.
No, me neither. I didn't know that they were connected.
And so I actually feel that this film is very impressionistic in a sense. So it is an artistic film. But it also is a portrait. Have you ever seen The Last Picture Show by Peter Bogdanovich?
Oh, yes, I did.
It's a condensed version of that. It's as if, the style is obviously more modern, and it's not that vintage black and white look, but it is a very condensed version of that film, and it's also treads on darker grounds in some connections. Basically, the story is, it takes place in a coming of age moment of these young boys who are transitioning from high school to wherever they will go. For some of them, baseball is the only future. Because other than that, they could end up working and having a normal job. But besides that, after baseball ends, there's the prom. So prom is also another important point of their lives. Now, I don't know any of that stuff because I didn't play baseball and I didn't go to the prom equivalent in Ireland. I was too cool for that. That's yeah, what I like to say.
We didn't have prom in Italy, so I really don't know what it is.
I know
from movies, but we don't have it a proper.
And so basically, it's a dark portrait of that time because in a sense, it seems to imply that these kids, the Generation Z, some people call it, you know, the new generation, probably deserved better, you know, in a sense. It's like the parents are either absent or just not able to handle whatever is going on with them. But that's the message that I got from it. There's a timelessness to it that also suggests that every generation has had to deal with these problems, especially, you know, this is especially shows men, young men, so it does have that masculine sense, but it's a portrayal of a more vulnerable masculinity. So it's quite an interesting film. Yeah, I would
rank
those, it highly.
And those actually, the vulnerable masculinity and the coming of age are two issues that I've treated in many, many movies this year, in every section, every level of narrative, but it's like two of the key issues to be treated, which is weird. I don't know why, probably everybody feels an urge to tell us the stories.
I don't know why, but it's nice. It's nice to get that, I think, because maybe for a long time we've been getting men that you know really had to be tough. Now it's like
women are getting tougher and men don't know what to do.
Exactly. Well, we'll see what happens. We're talking about art house cinema because mainstream cinema is different.
It's different.
Nothing has changed. It's going to be slower.
Staying on the women issue.
Yes.
You also saw the Miu Miu Women's Tales today.
Absolutely. So Miu Miu, this is an initiative that's been going on for a while.
Miu
basically calls up, you know, female directors and proposes to them to just make a short film, you know, finances, funds it. And basically the initiative is really to promote the work of female filmmakers and stories about women. So actually the trend I've noticed that it's really to get let's say a newcomer, you know, a new director who hasn't maybe directed as much pairing them up with a more experienced director. What I'm saying is two short films are presented each year, and so this year one of the films was by Haiti Gates, and it was called Shako Mako, and the second film was by the great Lynn Ramsey
that we all love.
We all love praise. Lynn Ramsey. I mean, she's amazing, and she's such a friendly, you know, human being. She's just a radiant human being, and she presented Brigitte. What's interesting about this year is that Haiti Gates has been directing documentaries thus far, especially for a web series. And this is her first fiction film of all time, basically. Well, as a director, because she was an actress before.
And but does it have a web series look or not?
Well, it's kind of it still has that that grittiness, but I feel that also it's because of the subject that talks about it also is a criticism for the way in which fiction filmmaking places the woman within the narratives, especially because, you know, I think the lead character is a bread seller, so she's basically doesn't talk in the film. This film expresses how she would like to talk, so that's kind of the idea behind it. Also, there's a complex historical backdrop that I'm not going to risk talking about in case I get it wrong, so forgive me. But I think either way, these films are going to be available online via the Miu Miu website shortly after the festival.
After the festival, yes,
and on YouTube. So Brigitte is another great film. It's about Lynn Ramsey just has a conversation with a friend who she's collaborated with, who is a photographer, and they just talk. It's a conversation, but it's spontaneous, and so it's very different from Lynn Ramsey's works, really. Yeah, it's very touching. It's great. So well worth checking out.
Well, you were talking about a film from Horizonte, which is one of the sections that you're looking the most, and I am too, because actually I want to talk about two French language films, both from the Horizonte sections. One is a Tunisian one, and the other one is a French one. The Tunisian is called Un Fils, a son, and it's a family drama set right after the end of the Tunisian Revolution about this very wealthy family that seems to live in a bubble of wealth and happiness and relaxation, they say it. And until the kid has a very serious health condition, they have to go to an hospital, and there is a secret coming out, and all the words around them scramble. And it's really nice. Nice in terms of filmmaking, not nice because it's a very serious subject, not funny. But the film has a very perfect narrative in terms of progression of your involvement as a viewer inside of this family,
yeah,
and inside of their drama. And it touches a couple of very serious issues for the Tunisian society, which are the masculinity and fatherhood and the role of a woman that after the revolution has changed again. The director told me in our interview that Tunisian is, in the Arab country, the country where the women are the freest. And but it's really, really involving. I don't know how to say. It's a classic drama. There's nothing too creative in terms of direction, but it's really solid, a solid film. And the other one is called My Days of Glory, My Jour de Gloire, by Antoine de Barry.
Could have said it in French. It would have been cool.
It's a comedy. It's a very simple, classic, old-fashioned comedy shot in like 3 weeks, even less, by a group of friends. And it's really fresh. It's a coming of age. Again, as we said earlier, but with a more like a funnier Jacques Tati.
Really?
Touch. Yeah.
I love that you mentioned Jacques Tati.
Yeah. It's really, it reminds me, I mean, you know, more talked than the Jacques Tati films,
right,
but really, really very, very similar. And I hope that they will get some award, or they will be at least released. The second one probably will be, because, you know, comedies, good comedies at least, are not very common lately.
We need more humor in festivals.
Oh, yeah.
Can we agree on that, please? Yeah. Okay, so we have to go because our boss was eager to do something else.
It's knocking on the door.
There's a very rich programming on all our social media, so I guess we'll be moving on to bigger and brighter things. I've done a lot of interviews. You've done a lot of interviews.
Oh, yeah. We'll keep on doing a lot of interviews in the next 5 days. So
I have an interview right now, actually. I'm going over to our next studio to do it.
So we say hi for now.
Sure, why not? Oh, hi, bye.
Hi, bye from Angela Cherby and from Matt Micucci.
It was a pleasure.
From Fred, the Festival Insider.
Fred Film Radio, 24/7 on Fred.fm and smartphone apps.